Hey guys, welcome to the inaugural episode of Talk About That. I'm your host, John Driver, and it's going to be a great podcast. We're going to have a lot of fun. We're going to be talking about real life, some fun stuff, some relational things. We're going to talk about some cultural things, some Jesus things. We're going to be honest and vulnerable, and we're just going to live life together. It's going to be a lot of fun. So I'd like to welcome today my co-host, Johnny W.
Hello.
Johnny, what sort of person has a letter for a last name? Exactly.
Well, I started performing comedy about 10 years ago, and I have a hard to pronounce last name. And so I shortened it to make it easier to be remembered and, you know, so it doesn't get butchered my whole life on stages.
You don't mind me asking, what is your last name?
It's Baxter.
Gotcha.
No, it's a Wethington.
Yeah.
The W stands for Wethington. Yeah. But people say Weddington and immediately.
I'm not sure you're giving people enough credit.
Worthington. It's pronounced exactly how it sounds. Like
it
you sound it out phonetically.
If you can't say Wethington, then I question your ability to function in society.
Exactly. So these are like comedy club owners.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And, well, Johnny's going to be joining us quite often. We'll have lots of different people that kind of come in and out that either co-host or guest with us. And as we go, we'll be interviewing people almost every week. And Johnny will sometimes be joining us via technology, the World Wide Web. He's out on the road a lot, or perhaps cellular phones.
Is that a thing? Is it still cellular, though?
Cellular phones? Isn't it?
Is it cellular technology
well,
anymore?
What else?
People don't say cell phone, though. They say, well, they say it, but I'm saying, I think a phone carrier does not say cell phone, do they?
Do you think it ever actually used, like, cells?
What does that even mean, those cells? I think cell means like battery cells.
Oh, I thought
not like cells in your body.
I mean like cells in the air.
We're not what you would call smart people.
Right. I don't really do.
I didn't think it like replicated cells and that's how it got the information to you.
Well, I don't know. If you think about it though, what else would it move towards? I guess that's what I'm asking. What do you think we have now it replaces?
If you think that cell phones used human cells, I don't know what. Listen, I don't know. I fear for you if you have a plasma screen. Let me just say that.
I did not say that it
did used. Did you give blood to get a plasma screen? Be honest with yourself.
I didn't say that it used human cells. There's cells think there's in the air.
Do you think there's blood in your television, John?
Is this how it's going to be?
It is.
But you think about it, though, it was. We were speaking of it now in past tense.
Yeah.
As if cellular phones exist. It was a pretty fascinating technology.
Right.
I don't know.
Yeah, we were just talking about how fax machines are obsolete now.
Right.
And I still don't know how they worked. It still feels like witchcraft that a document would go through a phone line and print out on the end of your phone line. And it would know exactly where each piece of ink needed, each dot of ink needed to go.
It's amazing.
I have no idea. Nobody knows how it works.
Well,
don't pretend
what,
that you do.
1960s or something?
Yeah. And now if you have a fax machine, it's like you may as well have a fossil. You're holding a fossil. And
what is this?
I've never heard of these.
Yeah, it's very, apologize. My, I got one of these Bluetooth neck things.
Oh, the thing.
Buzzing.
What is that
like
called?
Crazy. It's a.
What is it called? It looks like a bridle of a horse that you put around a horse. It really is. There's a sermon there.
I have
some of you are bridled
technology.
By technology. You it go this way yoke. And that, whichever it would take you.
You
friends,
you.
This not ought be. Wait, I don't know.
The blue yoke of technology. Yeah, I don't know what it's called. I just use it. But
yeah.
It is fax machines. We do disrespect them. We disrespect things we don't understand. And I think at the end of the day.
When did the telegraph become just like, what are you doing with the telegraph still?
Probably the moment you could hear somebody's voice instead.
Yeah. But maybe it was the first phone message. Because I remember the telegraph or the phone, the first message was, what hath God wrought?
Really?
Yeah. It was very, he credited. Now, I don't know. We can Google that? Can we Google that? Hang on. I'm going
to
Google it.
No, there's no way
what
to know.
What if I'm wrong?
There's no way to know.
We'll never know.
Yeah, sorry. You know, remember the old days? You just didn't know stuff, and it was okay. But
yeah.
Now
we know everything, and we're the dumbest people. We have all the information in the world in our pocket, and we use it to send cat videos.
Isn't it ridiculous?
Yeah.
Because I really believe that just an overabundance of information is not the same thing as an overabundance of education.
Oh, man.
Am I right?
Hang on.
He's looking it up right now. You have a purple case. Can't
what if... Yeah, I have a purple case. Yeah. What hath God wrought? Hang on. Telegraph. Samuel Morse dispatched a telegraph message from the U.S. Capitol to Alfred Vail at a railroad station in Baltimore, Maryland. The message, "What hath God wrought?"
What hath God wrought?
It does. It sounds like a sermon. It's very Billy Graham. Was telegraphed back to the Capitol a moment later by Vail. So Vail sent it. I don't know what did he send? What did Morse send? It doesn't say what he sent. Vail, what did he receive?
So
what if it was like,
"Hey, dude."
Yeah.
And his answer was,
What hath God wrought? He was trying that one up him with his being all dignified.
And that's why they don't include the first one.
Samuel Morse just sent the word fart, you know? Just a test. I did not know. I thought Morse was the one who sent that, but evidently not. So,
wow.
Also known for Morse code, John. A lot of people. Maybe he sent something in. So it was Morse code probably on the telegraph, right? It wasn't, he wasn't typing letters. So
the only way to communicate via telegraph is via Morse code. I think I've said via like four times and I've never
so
said
So how
via.
Long did it take to type "What hath God wrought"? I wonder how many. There's no way to find that out. Anyway.
Maybe it was supposed to be something else.
I think people feel when they have a historic thing, you know, it's just like you rarely know that you're experiencing history.
Right. Like right now. And so the inaugural podcast.
Exactly.
Right.
People feel a need to say something. I wonder if they practice it. Like, did Neil Armstrong know that he was going to say?
I think he knew. Think how much time he had.
One small step for a man.
Yeah. People act like he just zipped to the moon. I mean, they're floating out there, what, 2-3 months?
So he had time to think about, like, I should say one small step, one giant leap.
It'd be funny to think about all the things that didn't make the cut that he thought about saying.
Well, he said that he made a mistake. Like, there's been interviews since then because he was supposed to say one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind, which makes more sense. But he said one small, you'll see him pause, one small step for a man. He says a man.
Oh.
And by doing that, he kind of flubbed it a little bit because.
But it's quoted man. It's not quoted.
It's quoted as man, but he did. If you listen to the thing, it's very kind of. And so again, we could find it, but we'll play it at the end of the show.
Wow. Wow. I feel my life is enriched already.
Thank you.
I mean, honestly.
I know things, John.
Well, I know you do. Hey, we would like to, I think we should take this moment right now. So actually, the person I'm about to introduce happens to be our producer of the Talk About That podcast. But he's also going to be our special guest interviewee today, later on in the show, because he's an acclaimed musician and songwriter. I'd like to introduce you to the lovely Dane Allen.
Hey, how's it going? Happy to be here.
That's great to see you, Dane. See you wearing your Oklahoma hat today.
Oh, man, did they pull it off.
Gosh.
Boomer Sooner Boomer yesterday. Sooner.
You guys are not missing Bob Stoops at all, are you?
Well, he was actually there.
Really?
Yep. He was up in the, his own little private box seat thing.
Forgotten but not gone.
The crying room.
There was a clip. Bob Stoops
story. Did
you guys
see the clip where he came down on the field? And like celebrated with the guys and Lincoln.
And they were like, no, we're good.
They were going back into the locker room.
Wow.
Well, here's my question. The first thing I thought when I saw Baker Mayfield was, hasn't he been in college for 12 years?
No kidding. He beat us on like three different teams. Yeah, by the way, we're Tennessee fans. Yeah.
He was A&M, right?
No.
Baker Mayfield.
Baker Mayfield was at.
I think that he's immortal. And
he's the undead.
If you get really bad grades, can you just stay in school indefinitely? Is that a thing?
It takes a lot of people 7 years to graduate college.
Yeah, they're called.
I'm sure
Dr.
at some point. I don't know the rule, but I'm sure at some point you become ineligible to play football. I don't know what
that would
that
make sense.
Is.
Well, you can take a red shirt, and then you can also take a medical red shirt, and then you can also be a graduate transfer. So if you, in theory, started off with a red shirt, but you wouldn't be playing, and then you started your freshman year, that's 5 years. Then you had a year you were injured. So technically, we've been playing that year. You have a medical red shirt. Now that's 6 years. And then if you transfer to another school as a graduate student for one more year of eligibility, you could go 7 years.
Didn't Winky for Florida State do that too? Winky was like 27 when he graduated.
He had like five kids by the time.
He
like
did. He had kids.
Yeah. He had kids on the team.
A full lustrous beard. He had kids, yeah, as a backup tackle.
Yeah, we those of you listeners who don't know, I graduated from the University of Tennessee in Knoxville.
Go Vols.
And Johnny is from Knoxville, and Dane fancies himself.
I like how you glossed over the fact that I didn't go to college.
It was
interesting. And Johnny,
to you, apparently.
Johnny's from
somebody
didn't graduate from Bubkus.
Little
he got his JED.
Somebody's really
I'm not. It's just funny. You were trying to protect me, but it's just a funny thing.
I wasn't trying to protect you at all. What was I going to say? Johnny didn't go to college. That was the only if I would have said.
Johnny had a house there, and other people paid for it, and he lived in the...
Nah, you're taking this too far.
It's fine. Anyway, yes, I'm from Knoxville.
Johnny, we love you the same.
Vols fans, we got to stick together. Do you think Butch... What do you think about Butch?
Be honest. You know what?
You're very myopic in your Vol fandom. I just want to say that.
Appreciate you saying that before I had a chance to answer.
You're so reasonable about most anything else. But when it comes to the Vols, you're like, I'm telling you what, this is our year. We couldn't get the call, blah-de-blah. It's crazy the things that you'll say.
I think every Vol fan is crazy at this
point. Y'all act like that
really?
Other schools.
Oh, yeah. But you're not. But Oklahoma fans are reasonable.
I'm a Vol fan. No.
Okay.
Okay, my dad raised me on Oklahoma football.
Yes.
So I will always be a Sooner fan.
Yeah.
But I was born in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Who do you root for when they play each other?
Oklahoma. Because I was an Oklahoma fan first.
That's only
I didn't really get football at like, you know, when I was too young to like really understand. I just knew like, daddy likes Boomer Sooner.
That's only because he wants to root for the team that wins that game.
That's probably a little bit of that.
Yeah. You're doing the right thing.
And in those 2 years that we played you back to back, you won both. Although we were up by 14.
Man, we should have. That was terrible.
Yeah,
we collapsed. It was Baker Mayfield.
But he did play for another SEC school before that.
Well, Trevor Knight was our quarterback.
Trevor. Wasn't he one of the new
good
kids?
Portion of that. Trevor Knight?
Yeah.
New?
Oh, that's Jordan
new
Knight.
Kids in the
I'm
block.
Sorry. New kids on the block.
Oh. See, too young for that.
No. What? Okay. Yeah. Now, finish your thing. Butch Jones.
You know what? I have had moments where I was dissatisfied, discontented, if you will, as a Vol fan.
Mm.
I certainly have been discontented with certain calls, such as not going for two against Florida when you would be down by 13 and allowing them the possibility to come back, score two touchdowns, and win by one and suck the very soul and life out of everyone in the
That's a very specific scenario.
Yeah.
Didn't you think he had some time management issues in the game? That we barely won.
You know what? If you're talking about the game against Georgia Tech,
yes,
I really believe that everyone should be running the triple option because
it
was unstoppable.
Even if you don't currently run the triple option, you watch that tape and you're like, "That's what we're going to do against Tennessee."
It is. There was a backup to everything that you did, and I was actually very pleased that we won that game. I think that we shouldn't have,
no,
but we did. And so I'll take it. But right. I think Butch, here's the deal. I think a 9-win team in Tennessee, I'm content. Like, I want to do better. But
why would we get 9 wins? Where are the 9 wins this year exactly, John? Again, you're crazy.
We've had 9 wins the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And last year's
you mean
schedule,
9 including the bowl?
Well, Johnny, that counts. It does. We were 9-4 last year.
Uh-huh. Like, we lost to Vanderbilt last year, John.
Well.
Okay, Alabama's a loss.
Yeah.
Where are these wins? You think we beat Florida?
I do think we beat Florida.
Okay.
I think Florida,
they're favored by a touchdown. You
Florida
know
did not get to play last week because of the hurricane. Okay.
Right.
And they have a quarterback.
There could be
problem.
Some rust.
They played two quarterbacks.
And they got embarrassed at Michigan. You're
and
right.
they were totally shut off of Michigan. And I don't think they have it right now. Even if they'll have it later in the season, I think that, I mean, they're in Gainesville. We haven't won there since 2003 or 2001, maybe. So, three, Casey Clawson, I think. But my point being, I think that we can win that game. I don't know if we will. And I think that then you turn around and you have the schedule is fortuitous for us this year in that normally you have, like last year, here's what you had. You open up with Appy State, which is a 10-win team. Okay. So I understand we should all be Appy State, but they're not Indiana State, who just played yesterday. Like Appy State's a real team that beats real teams. Okay.
They beat Michigan. Saying Appy State?
Appalachian State.
Appy
never heard
how they say.
They
sure.
say
I
Appy.
I just heard App State.
It's like
And these are the things we bring to this podcast. We're
it
talking
is.
About that.
The Appy is
no
not as cool.
Does it not make you Appy?
Oh, that's perfect.
This is the kind of high quality comedy you can expect from this podcast.
This is wonderful.
Are you unappy? Okay. So we're off. We don't need to just talk about football. This is not a sports podcast.
We'll just make our predictions.
But the OU hat got us on that rabbit trail, and I was tickled for Oklahoma because Ohio State, you just want them to – something
totally.
About them.
Everyone hates them.
Like Urban Meyer is so good that – but you also kind of want to punch him in the face. You don't know why. You don't know why.
I agree.
You go, this guy's probably a good dude.
He's probably jealous.
And if he was my coach, you'd be like, yes, we got Urban Meyer.
Right.
But when he's not your coach, you're just like – man, well, I could punch him.
He's just very robotic, like always a grouch, I think.
And may have
and
faked.
Always amazing. Like, so people are just bound to hate him.
Okay, this is controversial, but did he fake the heart thing to get out of his Florida contract?
I don't know, maybe two national championships wasn't enough. Why would he want to get out?
He was coaching within like 9 months. You know what? Heart's good.
I feel good.
Turns out I got a good ticker.
It sounds just like him, by the way.
Yeah. Sorry. If you're an Ohio State fan, God love you.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I think the reason we hate him so bad is because he was the Florida.
Absolutely. You don't hate Vanderbilt. You hate Nick Saban.
You know, first of all,
because they cream you.
First of all, I will appreciate it if you will not tell me what I hate and do not hate, because I do hate Vanderbilt. Actually, yeah.
Do you hate Vanderbilt?
I'm a Nashvilleian. I hate him. They beat us 3 out of 5 last years.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I put those words together appropriately.
That's an embarrassing.
Words put together makes sense.
But it makes you mad at our team. It doesn't make you go like, what a rivalry we were building. Like, no.
Well, I saw an ESPN commentator yesterday said they thought Vanderbilt is better than Tennessee right now. I mean, they're playing good football. But
South Carolina looks good, too. The East is going to be strong.
Speaking of South Carolina, and I want to talk for a second about the hurricane a little bit.
Sure.
And I really want us to, number one, our thoughts and our prayers are going out to the victims of the hurricane. I actually have a friend who lives in the Tampa area and called me today. They have no electricity, but they made it through the night and, just some downed trees and other things in their yard. And my other good friend, Reggie Dabbs, who will be a guest on the show, he lives in Fort Myers. He stopped through. He flew his wife out.
He's in town, right?
Yeah, he's in Cookeville right now. He's coming around. So I saw him on Saturday for a minute, and they weren't sure. He said they were sending someone to their house today to look and see what the damage is, because they were in the A group of the evacuation zone.
So, oh, wow.
At the back of it. But so thoughts and prayers certainly go out to everyone. But I was watching the Weather Channel. My wife is sort of an amateur meteorologist, if you will, and she watches it 24 hours a day. I mean, and she watches, like, she's keeping up in her own journal with, like, the pressure changes and stuff. Like, well, it's moved. I mean, that was not a
good impression.
Did
she purchase a Doppler to put on the top of your house?
Man, I think she would. And I think we could create our own little weather channel and do well. I don't know.
We need more weather channels.
We do. It's a bad time. I was like, honey, I think it's still a hurricane, but I get if you're living there and we have friends. It sounds insensitive, but it's been about 72 hours straight. It's been on.
Yeah.
And so the other day though, I was watching Johnny and the governor of South Carolina came on to, he was giving their FEMA evacuation speech. And dude, I'm telling you, he had an accent. I couldn't believe it. It sounded like a combination of Colonel Sanders and Foghorn Leghorn.
Oh, wow.
Like, he was saying things, and he was like, now I do declare.
He didn't say I do declare.
I think he did.
Was he saying like a state of emergency? I do hereby say.
And I kid you not, though, he did say this. He said, now, many of you fine folks who have been evacuating the hurricane have been running by your local filling stations. He said filling stations, and he said it more than once. I kid you not. You've been going to your filling stations, and you've been topping off your gas tank in your automobile, and it's going to cause a problem. I don't know if he said automobile, but he said filling stations. It's causing a shortage of fuel. Mm. And so if we will all just get the appropriate amount of gas in our tanks, then we will be fine. And here in the fine state of South Carolina. And my wife was watching it, and she was like, oh my gosh, I could listen to him talk all day.
Really?
Like,
oh, she loved it.
Oh, wow. She loved it. I was like, I think you have a crush on the governor of South Carolina. It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I was very impressed.
Wow.
Yeah. I have a good friend, Marty Simpson, who's a comedian there, and he left a week early for a trip for one of his, because he was afraid he couldn't fly out of South Carolina, so he left 5 days early just to be out of the, because he has to go make money to bring back to buy sandbags or whatever. You got to buy, I don't know. It's awful. Well, I didn't know there were groups. There's a group to the evacuations?
Certain cities where the storm
is. Is it like Southwest, where if you're like in the sea, you have to have a middle seat? Like what?
I don't know, man. All I know is it is as crazy as it's ever been. You know, here's what we're not talking about today.
Yeah.
Houston.
Right.
You know, and how quickly that narrative.
A lot of them are still underwater.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And the billions and billions of dollars of damage. And so our thoughts and prayers obviously are still with the folks in Houston as well. And
it's terrible.
It's just a time in, you know, history that, and, you know, and I was thinking about this, Johnny, and this is sort of some of our topic for today. You know, I think there was a lot of time in my life, I consider myself a generous person and certainly one who wants to give to causes. And I think technology today has made it, you know, your cellular phones and your telegraphs and your fax machines
what
and
have
all
you.
These things. Like, there was a time in life where you would know about a disaster, but you wouldn't know about it as forthrightly, as instantaneously as we're hearing about it today. And then there was also a time where you just kind of knew that there was really nothing you could do but pray.
Yeah.
And I feel there have been a lot of times in life that I feel almost crushed by the knowledge of, okay, there's kids, and we'll talk over the course of the podcast, there's kids at a home in Cochabamba, Bolivia, that we visited many, many times. All three of us have been there.
Yeah.
And kids who went to prison with their moms just because that's the system there. And, well, we got to help support those kids. And then I have several kids for Compassion International that I help support. And, you know, well, I mean, there's stories. I mean, I would love to do so many more. Yeah. And then there's, you know, the international sex trade, it weighs on me. I have a 9-year-old daughter, and I just think about how often, right now in Tennessee, right now, I actually went to End Slavery website in Tennessee to talk about that we're at the hub in Nashville of all of these different interstates and how much trafficking happens right here.
It's crazy.
You begin to pile on. There was an earthquake, by the way, in Mexico.
The largest one
in like 50 years happens at the same time as the hurricane. And then there's North Korea, you know, and what's going on, not just with the nuclear threat, but what's going on in their concentration camps. Like, it's unbelievable what they're doing. There are three generations of punishment there where they're brainwashing and murdering people left and right. And this, the weight of the world's problems begins to grow to the point that we feel like we need to be involved. And that's really the social gospel. The social gospel says, I respond to this. But I see all the time as a pastor, and myself included, where, I mean, I begin to feel that it's beyond me. Like, I don't know if I can respond to all of these needs. I could give everything that I own away.
Yeah.
Now, I won't tell you how much I make doing this podcast, but guys, it's significant.
Yeah, it's absolutely.
But if I were we'll just wait. It would be embarrassing.
We'd like to thank our sponsors, Motrin. I want to be sponsored by just like inanimate objects, you know, like our sponsor today is grass, you know, I don't know why. I just think it would be funny. Our sponsor is concrete, not a brand, just concrete.
Would you have to write your own anyway?
Yeah. You write our own jingles and it's going to happen.
You're on it right now.
Boom.
You used to always talk about when they do
concrete, it's hard out there. Whatever, yeah.
You were talking one time about the things that they advertise sometimes that are not products you can buy.
Yeah, I used to get like, please buy U.S. postage stamps. It's like, well,
what else am I going to do?
Every time I taped 32 pennies to the envelope, nothing happened, so I'm on my way. Like, of course, I'm buying postage stamps.
Really? Then you used to go like, air.
Yeah, air.
Like, how much
the oxygen people.
How much money did you spend on this? I don't know. No choice.
No, but I know what you mean. Like, it's overwhelming, and so you want to do something, but it's when you see how much there is, you feel helpless. So some people have do nothing because it's like you're so overwhelmed. You're like, well, I can't help my little. But then if you did, like if you gave everything away, is that the right thing either? It's almost like not knowing was another era of society that we almost yearn for it. If you grew up then when we weren't just inundated with things day after day, you almost miss it. You're like, are we better off not knowing all this?
And that's what's hard. I mean, I think the miracle and the beauty of it is that we know that I know about, you know, there's two girls, one in Honduras and one in Ecuador that we support. I know their names and their life.
Mm-hmm.
But when you know 2 million girls, you know, it begins to feel so. I think that part of this has been the transition in my life away from an understanding of how God feels about me based upon the works that I do.
Yeah.
Based upon how good I can be and how much relief I can bring and how many problems in the world I can solve via. And I think the way Johnny, you and I are raised, and Dane, probably you as well. I mean, we were raised in a way that that so much of Christianity in America, it wasn't bad. It's not our parents are wrong. This is just the way we were all taught from generations past that, you know, it's our job to fix things. And kind of like it's Jesus's job to do something eternal for heaven. But hey, after that, he's given you salvation now. The rest is up to you. And so you know, don't expect him to do something for you if you're not going to do for yourself. And you like this American idealism,
yeah,
gets just kept pull yourself up by the bootstraps, kind of gets mixed into
God helps those. God helps those who helps themselves.
People think it's in the Bible.
They think it's a proverb. Yeah.
And so you begin to like, and as a pastor for years, and as a kid growing up in church, you know, you start to, and we, how many missions trip have I taken kids on?
Yeah.
Where it's like, hey, we're going to go down there, we're going to live out the gospel. And that's good and true, and we're not anti that, but you begin to somewhere inside your mind, and hey, let's talk about that. This is what this is about. You begin inside your mind to ascribe your value to yourself, or limit your value, or elevate your value based upon how much good in the world you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds really good, even to a lot of Christians. And what we're not saying is, hey, because the truth is, I mean, James, the book of James would say, hey, well, you know, but if you don't have these works to substantiate your faith, then your faith is dead. But we can't forget that James was saying that in the response of what the real gospel was at the time, that they understood that there's nothing I could do to earn. He wasn't. We take it out of context, like we're already in a works-based mindset, so then we gravitate to those to go, well, this is how I know I'm a good Christian. This is all the good I do. This is the kids I support.
Yeah.
This is how much I gave to the hurricane relief effort, this and that and this. And you begin to – it sounds like a good thing, but I find myself bearing a weight that only God can bear. I think at the end of the day, there's only one who really knows all the little kids in the world today who are suffering. I don't understand that. Mm-hmm. There's only one who knows all the seismic activity, all the hurricane activity, all those things. And there's only one who's able to contain the knowledge of all that. And no matter how much my phone buzzes, it's not me. But if I try to take it all in, I think it can hurt us. And please understand me. Y'all know I'm not saying, hey, I think we should stop caring and stop listening and go off the grid and all those things. But I do think that Christians need to hear a message that, hey, listen, just because the world is in shambles today doesn't mean that you're supposed to lose your hope, because his yoke or that weight, that thing around your neck today, is not supposed to be so heavy that you can't bear it.
Yeah.
It's not that it's not heavy. You're just not supposed to carry it. It is heavy. But who's carrying it in your life?
Right.
You know, is it you or is it someone else? That's just my thought.
Well, yeah, and it's the thing, too, about not becoming the savior yourself, because we want to swoop in. That's Americanism anyways. Like we come in, we're self-made. We pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, or we're achievement-oriented as a culture. And so even growing up in, you know, conservatism, like now Dane's generation is starting to question the roots of even capitalism and conservatism, that says you are the sum of your life choices, or if you're in a situation, it's because of something that you did. And then, you know, you start seeing people that are born into poverty or born, it's like the luck of the draw. We happen to be born, you know, in Tennessee, in the United States of America, somebody else, you start questioning that stuff and you're like, but does this reconcile with that? Does that make sense? You know? And so, yeah, you go, maybe there's an order to this that is not just about my choices and what I do and what I don't do. I don't know.
Yeah. I think the flip side of, you know, don't, then who's going to help them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a balance. There's a healthy balance, I think, with everything, but specifically with this, you know, yes, go help. Or if you can't, that's also fine too. Like it's not, your salvation is not hanging in the balance on whether you, or your Christianity is not hanging in the balance on whether or not you go and help people in Florida.
Well,
or if you stay at home. Like it doesn't make you a terrible person or a Satan worshiper if you stay at home. Like that's just not the case.
Right. I mean, it could be disobedience. There may be a case in life where, hey, you should have.
Mm-hmm.
Even then, like I have a kid and she's disobedient all the time. Or she may miss it. It doesn't mean, one, that she stops seeing my kid. It doesn't mean, two, that I'm not going to talk to her about it. And it doesn't mean, three, that I'm not going to give her another opportunity to be obedient the very next day.
Right.
And I think that, I think you're exactly right. I think it should be the Christ followers who are the first on the ground. And we hope that it is. Mm-hmm. I think it's that when this foundation of your faith, and Johnny, you were hinting at that, is mixed in with this, it's up to me. It's the sum of my choices.
Right.
There are those who it's the sum of theirs as well. And they have not made as good a choice. I lived this. I mean, if I'm being honest and vulnerable.
Totally. I think that's unhealthy and if not a little bit narcissistic.
Oh, it's absolutely narcissistic.
Well, it helps you to look past somebody. You can go, well, here's a poor person, but they live there because they didn't go get an education, whatever. Well, what if there were barriers to them getting an education? Right. There weren't barriers for me. Well, but that's just a myth. There's not. Well, what if I can prove to you that there are barriers and that, you know, cities were literally planned along railroad. There literally was across the tracks, and cities were laid out. There were red lines, and there were housing was denied to certain people for generations. And now and you go, and once you prove that, then it chips away at your whole belief system. And then you find yourself going, maybe this is, like, maybe we need to show grace to everybody, not just people that, like, even if people made wrong choices, and there's people that made wrong choices on the other side too, but it's like,
well, like, wrong choices exempt you from being shown grace.
Right.
Grace, by definition, should be shown the most to people who made wrong choices, because what we begin to quantify the levels of grace. Well, my wrong choices are of a lesser degree than yours.
Yeah.
Therefore, I need less grace than you. And I think that's the poison that. And I don't know if it was ever taught to me. I think that's just a natural progression, because I'm a self-centered person. And I think it comes down to, what do you mix? I love this idea. If you're building a foundation, you're mixing it like concrete.
Mm-hmm.
And you put something in there that shouldn't have been in there that you're trying to get out, but it's a part of the fabric now.
Yeah.
When it hardens, there's no way. And I think that's the sad tragedy of what's happened to the faith of a lot of people in our generation,
mm-hmm.
is that maybe 85 to 90% of what the foundation of their faith is built upon is right, but we put other things in there.
Yeah.
We mix something with grace. We mix something in there, whether it was this, hey, you know, yes, Jesus loves you just the way you are. It's all these conflicting messages. Jesus loves you just the way you are, and he accepts you, and he, you know, you can't make it to heaven by your own good works and all those things. But then when you go to church day in and day out, if you'd have sat in my ministry for years and years, I would have proclaimed those things to be true, but what I was really giving you were the tools to be a better person.
Mm-hmm.
So now that that's happened, though, here's how you resist temptation.
Right.
Here's all the charts and graphs.
Behavior modification. Right,
behavior modification.
Yeah.
And so what these unspoken and spoken things are now in conflict. And then the problem is, when it doesn't work, as it doesn't, because only the real gospel works. Because if you have a gospel built upon how good you can be, then there's nothing supernatural about it at all. And people begin to question that. It doesn't actually change your desires. It doesn't actually change your abilities. It doesn't give you strength. It just, it's now based upon how good you can resist, or how good, you know. And at the end of the day, there's nothing supernatural. You don't have honest, vulnerable conversations and community with people, because you don't have to. It's based upon how good you can be. And then the day that that fails you, you feel like you got to chip up the whole foundation.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is you're chipping away 85% of what's good.
Yeah.
It wasn't necessary in the first place. We just mixed in the wrong thing.
Yeah, I see that a lot mixed in too now with like the Colin Kaepernick thing. I'm of two minds about it. I think it's somebody's right to protest. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what made America great. Do I agree with the way he's doing it? Maybe not. But I do think what it's made Christians do, because I've seen Christians who are, friends, who they're so mad about it.
Yeah.
Maybe define for listeners.
Colin Kaepernick knelt for the national anthem for many, many games last season. Now he's a free agent and has no job, and people think he's being blacklisted and blackballed by the NFL. They're colluding together to not give this guy a job. And I don't know whether that's true. I don't know enough to know that about how, whether or not. Now, obviously, he would be a distraction if he just comes to your team. So you got to weigh whether that would be worth it. If I was an owner, it's a business. So first of all, it's not real persecution, because it's a business and they can decide who they want to hire. But I do think it's fascinating here. A Christian had these strong beliefs, and what they're doing, it's like the concrete thing. They've mixed in nationalism and what we call jingoism. If you look back to like McCarthy era, where it was like America became an idol for a lot of people, and anybody not an American was an enemy of the state. Instead of seeing the human race as a whole, and it's a people group that needed Jesus, we let this jingoism and nationalism mix in. And now it's such a part of the fabric. I did a show in Alabama, John, where it was a men's event, and they got up and sang before I came up. It was near July 4th. It was like a cookout. These guys got up and sang God Bless the USA, of like a choir, these four guys, like a Southern gospel thing. They put the words on the screen like it was a worship song, and people stood up and lifted their hands as a flag was on the graphic. And I was never more creeped out in my entire life.
Where was this?
This was at a church in Alabama. This was a couple of years ago.
Oh, I've seen it my whole life.
And you go, I don't know that it's just, I think it's an error. I don't think it's like these guys are bad guys.
That is super creepy though.
But it just made me go, Well, what if America goes wrong? What if we stop doing what God wants us to do? But you still have America. You've mixed it in with Christianity. So right. America can't be wrong. We, you know, it's like the office that we have to respect the office of the presidency. Do we? I can pray for my leaders and go, I'm going to hold you accountable too. And so I think there's all that stuff that we've mixed in the concrete. Like you said, we're chipping away. And now like the good that's in there is being laid waste as well.
Yeah. You know, the nationalism thing. And it's all, you have to be careful even when you talk about it, because I'm not anti not only respect, but celebration of not only my country, but the men. I mean, I have good friends in the military.
Absolutely.
And all those things. We're not saying that. We've made this such a hot button that it's hard now to talk about it. But you were, and there was a book I was looking for while you were talking, and I'm having trouble tracking it down. A guy wrote a book. It's a very academic book about that very thing, the mixing of nationalism and American culture, in religion, because I can remember being the church services throughout my life where there were those who lift their hands and worship during a patriotic song in a church setting when we're having a 4th of July service or something else. Now, there's a chance they're just thanking God, you know, for their country.
Yeah, and for freedom. And yeah.
What's the difference between a normal worship song that we would sing on Sunday and that song? They're asking God to bless America. You know?
Correct.
I'm not standing in any position here. I'm just playing devil's advocate.
Well, sure, but I mean, I'm talking about like, well, yes, sure.
But I'm thinking like, yeah, well, like, here's, okay.
Let's find out. Let's figure out why that's creepy.
Well,
and why that's
right, because you know what? You're just having trouble identifying why.
Right.
Right. I think that it's when, I think Johnny hit it on the head. It's when I now ascribe to my nation the attributes of my God, as if one and the other are so. And Americans really have a. You know, I was a history major and a history teacher, and I'm by no means a historian. You know, but you know, Americans over time, they seem to have a lack of understanding, myself included, that we're only 200 years old, just over 200 years old, and that's not very long.
No.
Like, I'll watch these History Channel specials on these ancient societies where we were literally stumble upon the ruins of this city, and we will find out that they lasted there for like 1,000 years, and no one's even heard of them before. And we're just now finding, and how many of those have sprung up over the course of history, we don't even know. Mm-hmm. And yet we feel like that we've been here forever and that we're somehow tied into God's plan. There are those who take biblical prophecy and try to find America in it. And my personal take on that is we're not in it. Like, we're not that important. That's, you're talking about narcissism. Like, we're important to God. I'm not saying we're not important to God, but are we the linchpin of God's plans? There are those who believe that we are. Well, guys, God's people, you know, that he chose that we can read throughout the Bible. If you want to look at the linchpin, go to the Middle East and take a look at Jerusalem and what's happening there. I believe those things are going to be where that plays out. But to that end, when I begin now to believe, and Johnny's right, I can respect the office of the president. And I think this is, let's talk about that. Some people really believe that the best way to respect someone or to love someone is to say nothing about their faults.
Right.
Because we have watered down what it really means. At the end of the day, if I'm in, and I consider you two guys some of my best friends in the world, if I love you well, and there's this glaring thing in your life, you know, there's a book that I just got to collaborate on with my friend Todd Wagner, and it comes out in October, and we'll talk about it more, I'm sure. But one of the things he says is in the book is this: there are Christians out there who have friends, okay, and that friend is so socially inept, like the friend cannot function in social environment simply because they're rude or because they keep saying this inflammatory thing or this offensive thing or whatever.
This is about me. Is an intervention.
Johnny, I think you know why we've called you here.
Wow.
So
you're the narcissist we're talking about.
We went a long way to have this talk. So there's really, no podcast.
It's a really elaborate intervention.
And so
speaking of narcissism, shameless plug there about your upcoming book.
You know, there's a new book out. Where is it?
Thumb through it. Here, I had a shelf of them. And so he says, the thing is that person will go out and meet strangers in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And in 5 seconds, a stranger can pinpoint that social hang-up, whatever it may be. It doesn't make you a bad person.
Yeah.
It doesn't make you someone that we shouldn't love. he just says, that stranger knows, oh, it's because you keep doing this or whatever. And they could say it to them like that. But they've had friends who are, quote,
right,
believers, who they've been friends with for a decade, two right, decades, who do not love them enough yeah, to say, hey, bro, you're kind of offensive when
yeah,
you
it's like
this.
If your friend has a booger. Like, if you don't tell your friend he has a booger, you're not really their friend.
Exactly.
You're afraid to say, like, oh, gosh. You let them go into a restaurant now with that? Come on, what are you doing, buddy? You're not well, their exactly, friend.
A real
be
friend.
Be a real you, friend.
Johnny, yeah, I've been meaning to tell you.
Wow.
Yeah.
You have and I'm tall. Booger. I am tall, too. And so when I stand on a stage,
you're like a human
I'm
booger,
above people, and people look right at my, and I have a deviated septum, so I have this one, like, really slanted, awkward nostril. And I've been told I have the nostrils of a champion, an ex-heavyweight champion. And so people literally can look up and see a bat in the cave for me pretty easily.
If I've got a,
I double check before I go out. Because I go, they're looking right up my nose. I'm 6'4", and I'm 10 feet above you anyway.
So you're saying
before every show, I'm
you're
checking.
You're in the green room, you're by yourself.
Absolutely.
You may have just got a booger mirror.
Two by brownie.
I have a special, it's a dental mirror. And
you're saying you're going to go into the bathroom.
It telescopes out.
You're going to go into the bathroom.
I double check.
And look up your nose holes.
I look into, yes.
And be like, okay, I'm good now.
I'm good. I'm good. Or, wow, I'm glad I checked because holy moly.
So you said that you have, so your nose is like planning nefarious plots. No, wait, no, that's not
destroy,
a deviant, that's a devious septum.
That's a different thing.
Okay,
that's
okay,
different,
okay,
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's excellent.
Excellent. It must take over the world.
I've never noticed that, just so you know.
Thank
never
you.
Noticed your gigantic nose.
I have, well, it's crooked. And Curry thinks I should get it fixed, by the way.
Oh, wow. We went there.
No.
She...
It looks fine to me.
So you're saying if you have
I
real
snore.
Friends...
Well, she's saying because I snore, though.
Oh, okay.
Right.
Well,
yeah. The air quotes right now.
You do. I
you
can
snore.
Confirm that. You do snore.
She wants you to look like a supermodel,
lot,
bro.
She...
You
well,
have to do a lot more than the nose.
That's what I'm saying. That's not the first surgery. That's like 12B.
I've drawn this rough flow chart. Please excuse the crudity of this.
She
model.
Just hands me a. She just hands a photo over to the doctor. And like, man, this is Ryan Gosling. There's no. This isn't a wand I'm holding. It's a scalpel.
Here's three credit cards. Do what you will. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, by the way, Ryan Gosling's like 5'8", so I'm 6'4".
That's like
so
the thing you have.
Eat it, Ryan Gosling.
Yeah, I love that. Boy, yeah, you really showed.
He only wishes that he could hover over people showing them their horrible nose goblins.
Funny story about your snoring.
Yeah.
There was one time. I don't remember where we were. We were in some hotel room, and it was like 4 o'clock in the morning. You woke me up.
Oh, boy.
Because I was on the road with you
some
weekend. We were
right,
doing some shows. You woke me up.
Mm-hmm.
I was terrified.
Of the snoring?
Well, you weren't just snoring.
Oh.
You like woke up snoring.
Yeah.
And then you sat up in your bed.
Okay.
And you started rubbing your face.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the face smack.
You like, yeah,
well,
like
my sinuses
smack your face, but like rubbing your entire face with your hands.
Well, yeah.
And making this noise.
Yes.
I was terrified.
I get sinuses problems when I travel.
You get sinuses problems?
Do you know when you do that?
Shame.
Or was
I have
cognizant?
English language issues.
Were you cognizant when you did that?
There's no way to know.
Are you ever aware?
I don't know if I'm cognizant right now.
Do you know when you do that, though?
Yeah.
Typically.
Maybe.
Johnny,
you didn't seem like you were.
It was involuntary?
Yeah. That's why it was scary to me.
We should probably get some context for our listeners because, okay, so Johnny and I were in a band for like 8 years together.
Yeah.
Dane is in a band we're going to talk about a little bit later in the show. And
it is a little bit later in the show, John.
Guys, this show is 7 hours.
We're 45 minutes
in. Oh, we're
almost
great. We got tons of time.
Almost 45 minutes.
Man.
So, but Dane and I and Johnny have all traveled together a lot, different trips, different band things. And so Johnny is notorious.
Right.
When I said nefarious nostrils,
mm-hmm,
like it's true. Like the dude I have watched over the years and Dane, were you a child when this happened? No wonder it scared you.
I was probably in my 20s.
Okay. Well, I don't know why I would scare you then. But at the end of the
because
day,
because it was weird. It freaked me out.
No, it is. And he doesn't know that he literally sits up and he punches his nose.
No, I don't punch it. There's something.
You also have night terrors.
Yeah.
And that's what my mind went to.
Right.
He's going to think I'm an intruder.
Yeah.
And he's going to clobber me to death.
I'm going to start rubbing your face violently.
Definitely creepy.
That's what killed my dad. I rubbed his face until That and heart disease. But I think the face rubbing had a role and played a big part. Anyway, no, here's the deal. Here's the true story. Since I moved to Nashville, which is basically when the band broke up, John, so thanks very much.
Wow. You had to throw that in.
My allergies have been 10 times better. So I don't have a lot of the same.
You know, you moved to Tennessee into the allergy basin.
When I moved to Nashville from Knoxville, because I moved,
right.
I'm telling you, my allergies 10 times
better.
Well,
supposedly the Cumberland Plateau or That's basin weird. Here for us is supposed to be worse than Knoxville. Although
All I
you
know,
are up there in the Smoky Mountains, which is not actually yeah. fog. Supposedly
it's pollution.
That's what
Smoky Mountains are pollution.
I want to go back and
true?
I want to read yeah. the account.
No. The smoke is from pollution.
But here's the deal. Well,
It's like fog.
It's pollution. I think it's a myth.
Because it might be exacerbated by the pollution. Yeah, but here's boy. The deal. You think
you're just offending the Smokies here.
Do you think that they named the Smoky Mountains?
No, they didn't know it was pollution yeah, then.
Well, that's the
I
point.
Don't think
they
it
had
was
smoke.
They also
before.
Thought an eclipse was the devil blotting out the sun, John.
But that point, they named it the Smoky Mountains before there was pollution. That's my point.
They're like, ah, the devil.
Yeah, I don't know if I buy that.
The devil took the sun away. Give me another cup of that moonshine.
See, this is the rewriting of history that we yeah. are going to stop with this podcast.
Do but. You think that people... No, absolutely my allergies have gotten better, though, John. So I think... It's fun to pick on me. I get it. Look, I'm an easy target.
I'm not picking on you.
I'm being vulnerable.
Fine, too. It's just a good story.
But I think back to our point in hand that there are those in life that a friend never tells them. And I think that what we're dealing with is a lack of understanding the right boundaries. My foundations and the concrete. What's mixed into your boundaries? What would you tolerate in a conversation? I'm at the place in my life today. God's honest truth. Or I really want the people who say they love me to love me well enough to make me better. And that's something that Todd says in the book. He says, look, if Jesus loves you enough to change you, then so should your friends or to help you along. I mean, if he loves you that good, loves you that well, then he should, you know, I want that. I desire that. I don't want to be like beat up all the time.
Right, right.
But if I know you're not going anywhere, and I know it's for my good, then I'd much rather, before I walk on the stage, if my zipper's down... You know, this is the metaphor.
Right.
And I'd rather have somebody that loves me say, hey, bro, you know, zipper's down.
Yeah. That's...
Agreed.
God, man, tears. Sorry, that made me tear up.
Okay. Can I say this, too? Because I know I brought up Colin Kaepernick, and he's very divisive. This issue's divisive, and maybe I sound like somebody who's being like some Marxist or something. But I have a lot of respect for the flag. If I was an NFL player, I would kneel.
Yeah.
I would stand. I wouldn't kneel. I would stand for the flag. I would hold the edge of the
Whatever
flag.
Whatever shows respect.
Whatever shows respect.
Well, exactly. And I think that the thing that's causing disillusionment is that we are not acknowledging the fact that we can have a country that we love and that we celebrate its history. And there's lots of conversations I know we can have in the future about monuments and other things. That, you know, this is the cultural dialogue right now. And man, I celebrate it and I'm grateful for it. At the end of the day, understanding that I have citizenship in multiple places and I have to know which one is my highest reality.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say which one trumps which one, but then you held back from saying the word Trump. What trumps your...
You know, but at the end of the day, I mean, and I'm not trying to be overly religious sounding about it, but, you know, that I think it's okay. Here's the problem. If it offends us... to talk about it,
then
we have to evaluate. That's the whole point of this podcast. We have to evaluate what we should be talking about, and that is the problem is not the topic.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is that it offends us to have honest conversation about the topic because we've not built this bridge across to one another to be able to sustain the actual weight of honest community conversation.
Yeah.
And that's the way I feel about texting and social media, and I'm involved in both. But I just always want to say this, and I used to manage a band, as some of you know. Yeah. And we used to have that conversation because anytime that the bandmates would begin texting one another about important things, it would descend into utter just chaos and madness and gnashing of teeth. And because they were not possessing within that medium the tools of actual interaction and conversation to provide the context of looking one another in the eyes.
Yeah.
And on social media even, that I don't believe anything of significance in terms of a heart change can happen on social media if there's dialogue. Now, it can happen that I show you the picture of a kid on Instagram, you know, that I need you to do something about or relief. Absolutely. But that's not a conversation. If when we start having conversations, especially on Facebook, where we start having comments back and forth in a thread, you have to realize if you and I, Johnny, let's be honest, you and I are talking right now in front of millions of people, right, via this podcast. And it changes the way that we talk.
Yeah.
Because millions of people are listening right now. And at the end of the day, at the end of the day, that's what's happening on social media. And if you think that even though your position is correct, if you think the fact that millions of people could be listening or watching via Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or whatever you're choosing to do, if it's not changed, of course, at least say this. It's not a real conversation.
Yeah.
It's not. It's something. Yeah. It can be valid, significant, but it's not a real conversation as it would be if we're sitting across the table and we're having to look each other in the eyes. I remember there was this. I haven't got a lot of hate mail in my life, Johnny. Yeah. But God, that sounds like I'm plugging myself. But I wrote this book with a guy one time named David Ring, and it was kind of a adaptation. It was based on a true story, and wrote it in 1969, Liberty, Missouri. And it was this story of
you wrote it in 1969, Liberty,
Johnny,
Missouri.
I went back in time.
How did you do that?
It was unbelievable.
there I was.
Words, good me. And so I the setting was then
right,
and we had this whole like author preface where we said, as you know, hey guys, as the writer, I took liberty with. No pun intended, it was set in Liberty. I know you picked up on that.
I took.
And so, Dane, I'll be here all day. but there was, I said, hey, you know, this is a true story. Mm-hmm. It's like a movie, though. There may be a case where we change some names or identities to protect people or situations. Because
right.
It was some really heavy stuff in this book. And it's called The Boy Born Dead, available at Amazon.com. And so we did this. And this dude went to Amazon and left this unbelievably scathing review where basically he didn't call out, by the way, the author of the book is the guy I was writing about. His name is David Ring. He's the author. He has cerebral palsy. And so, you know, writing and other things would be difficult for him. I'm part of his team. And there was another collaborator on it as well that I based the main character off of him. It was his childhood best friend. And so everyone knows this. I'm the with guy on the book. And this guy didn't just write that review. He sent me a personal email. And it was the most unbelievable thing I'd ever read before. And he basically said, you are a sham. David Ring is a great man, and you have tarnished his entire life. You're a liar.
Wow.
I mean, he called me everything under the book. And then he said this, Johnny. He said, don't even bother replying, because I won't even acknowledge that you do.
Yeah.
And let's talk about that. Like,
may God have mercy on your soul.
Could you please put the title of this podcast
No, that's why I wanted to call it that. Because at the end of the day, like, bro, does it really matter what you just said to me?
Yeah.
Like, the problem is...
You're not willing to listen.
But I wanted to send an email and say, listen, man, I will buy you dinner wherever you are. I even know where you are. If you will sit down across a table from me, look me in the eyes like a man, and say the things you just said and give me your actual reasoning, I would actually like to hear that. But bottom line is, if I ever had the opportunity or the honor, and if that guy's listening among those millions
of
people...
You really did say this to him.
No, I didn't bother replying because he wasn't going to reply, and I didn't want to do it in anger, you know. But I still may. But at the end of the day...
listening...
You're kind of doing that right now on this podcast.
Wow.
Doing the same thing he did to you.
That's why I started this. Number one, to talk about Johnny's nostrils.
Yeah.
And this fact that he needs surgery. And then number two...
Why is this podcast not called Johnny? I guarantee you Johnny's Nostrils is not taken as a podcast.
Johnny's Nostrils.com. You can be a Johnny Nostril partner. in the Johnny Nostril portal. Anyway, at the end of the day, though, he didn't want to have a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so easy to just... I know we're not dogging social media today, but man, it's so easy to sound off. And I think that a good rule of thumb would be in my life, like, look... If I can't have a real conversation here, then what's the point?
Right.
It's just gonna do what it does, and we've seen what it does. Is it helping President Trump? to be tweeting into the stratosphere his opinion?
No.
Whether you like him or dislike him, is it really helping? Like, I know hardcore Trump supporters who are like, I had one tell me the other day, I support him. I voted for him. I just wish to God in heaven someone would take his phone away.
Right.
Like, they're just begging it, you know, because it's not helping to do that.
Yeah, it is. You say things in a vacuum and there's no listening. Everybody wants to have the last word. And you can have the last word on social media even if you are the least educated person. You just have to be vigilant. If you're the most long-suffering vigilant person, you can just be like, it can just descend into, well, you suck. And then you just keep going. And then, like, it started out of a highly intelligent conversation, but whoever just has the ones have, like, and that's not how a real conversation should go. Right. It should be like, okay, do you have something to contribute? And I'm going to listen to your side of it, and then I'm going to say, then you're going. But yeah, if you just want to cut somebody off, it's a vacuum. We're just shouting our viewpoint, and then we delete anybody that doesn't agree with us too. Right. So that way, only people who have our like mind. It's crazy. It's like we've developed another bubble. We always talk about how Christianity in the 90s and 80s was a bubble and how we were almost afraid of the world. So we demonized everything outside of our bubble. Well, that's what social media is becoming for all belief systems. If you're Muslim, if you're liberal, if you're whatever, I create a walled-in version of the universe with only my people in it. So then they just talk about narcissism. I've never been challenged now. I always think I'm right. So now I go out into the world thinking that's just how it is.
And when you get challenged, you get obliterated.
Yeah, you crumble.
You question everything.
Yeah.
When it was never meant. That's what I'm saying. Yeah, the disillusionment was unnecessary because we weren't honest with you when you built your foundation.
Yeah.
You know, and so, hey, you know, on that note, I would love to welcome to the show our special guest today, Dane Allen.
Hey. We already welcomed him, John.
Well, yeah, but now he's a special guest.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah, and in all actuality, what Dane is probably going to talk about has nothing to do with anything we were just
talking
about.
That's totally fine.
But Dane is Dane's a songwriter here in Nashville. He is a musician, an avid musician, and very talented, a guitar player, a vocalist, and I've been a good friend for a long time. And Dane, we just wanted you to come on today and tell us a little bit. I know you have a new project that is being being released and different things that are happening. Tell us about what's going on in your music world.
Yeah. So it's hard to talk about it. This is the first time I've actually talked about this on a...
In front of millions of people.
Right, millions of people.
Right.
Well, in this format or like in an interview, it's a little strange. But so, we recorded an album a year and a half ago. Mm. And, 12 tracks. And
it's a long time in music.
But we're not able to release it until, about a month ago, month and a half ago, we started releasing songs. So it's a really exciting time for us.
What's the name of your band?
It's Loyals.
Loyals. And what's your website if we wanted to go hear some of this music?
You can find it on Spotify. You can find it on Apple Music, wherever you can see
beautiful. Loyals.
Just search, Loyals. Keyword search, Loyals.
Loyals. With a Z, right? Just kidding.
Three Zs at the end.
Loyals. What kind of music is it, Dane? I mean, I've heard it.
Pop. Probably fits more into like the alternative kind of things that are going around right now.
Yeah.
We signed with Tooth & Nail.
Oh, Tooth & Nail
Records. Yeah. Bands like Hearts Like Lions or, back in the day, Under Oath, Emery, those kinds of bands.
Yeah.
So it's a little interesting, a pop band being on that label. There's some degree of pop on their label for sure, but I feel like this is probably the most, I don't know a different word for it, but I guess just pop. Like it's not.
Yeah, you're the most probably synth-laden band that they have on the roster, probably,
maybe.
Right? You think? I don't know.
You know, I think it's just blatantly pop. Like, we're not trying to do anything else. We're not trying to be
feminine, if you will.
Yeah, super. Dane's voice can get high, guys. I don't know how to say it.
It's impressive.
I lost a filling during worship last Sunday. I didn't think it could happen. And sure, I was eating one of those peanut butter chews that they put out for Halloween, but... You know, the ones.
I thought you meant the ones that we give out at church to visitors when they come.
Tim Hawkins has a bit about those peanut butter with the wax paper, the orange wax paper.
Oh, they're horrible.
He's like, they taste like peanut butter and burnt hair.
They really do.
Yeah. Anyway, Dane's voice is tremendously high.
We should probably talk about that a little bit. I also lead worship at the church John Driver is.
Oh, my church.
Yeah. What's your official title? Teaching pastor.
I'm the teaching pastor. Yeah, I knew all that. We led worship together yesterday.
Yeah.
But I'm just...
Right.
But the millions of people listening don't know.
Right, for people who don't know.
Right. So you're a worship director.
Yeah. And I will produce this show, but I'll also kind of be on as a...
Right.
I don't know.
What do we call
it? A voice of reason.
I don't know. What am I?
A voice of reason.
I guess I'll just be consistently here and there. I might be working on the actual file in the middle of interviews or in the middle of episodes, but...
You should write. I want you to write like a cool pop jingle that intros the show and lay some stuff on it.
Yeah.
I'll give you some words.
I want to get with Gomez on something because I feel like we could get something really
cool.
Because
if you hook him with the right, like that bumper music can draw you in.
Totally. No, I really do want to do like a...
I think it'd be killer.
Like an intro.
Because if the first thing they hear is John's voice, I think they're going to be a lot of cars like just going straight into a guardrail. You know, like, what is this? You can't unplug those headphones fast enough. You're like, it got into my head. Like, you can't.
It's on me.
But if they heard like a soothing synth
something
pop,
like
kind
maybe,
of a,
I do declare that
but
this
over,
here podcast will be heard at every filling station.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, I don't...
Well, I'm excited for the band, by the way. I mean, we're so proud of Dane, and they've been... We've known these guys since they were seventh graders.
I think that's why this is so much fun, because there's so much history in the three of us and kind of our journeys together, and it's just a lot of fun to be able to sit down and talk about.
Super cool music, and you guys are really doing something awesome and different, and I think it's going to be great.
Very talented and great writing. And
Evan, the bass player for Loyals, travels a lot as my road assistant.
Yeah.
So I get to hear all the tracks when they come out. And so
when you see the picture of Loyals, Evan is the guy with the majestic beard.
Right.
Majestic beard. You know, here, can I, this is just going to sound like I'm an old person. Can nobody smile? You guys look so mad in your photo.
I don't know.
I mean, not even just like a smirk. Give me a smirk. You don't have to show teeth like some.
There,
it's like, you
told,
look like you guys are getting ready to throw fists. Like, it's on. Maybe. It's pop music. So pop music, there should be a guard let down. Like, I get if it's a rock band, like, you got to look aggressive. But your music's not aggressive.
Right, yours looks like some of it is in anger. Like, we're looking.
Some of the songs are aggressive, but I don't think that really matters. I don't think whether a band is pop or country.
I
want to
see just one album cover or a promo photo shoot where a band is looking the same direction and kind of smirking.
That doesn't make for a good picture.
It wouldn't
though.
Make me happy,
Johnny,
though.
You know,
it looks like a family portrait. Photos.
I want Olin Mills, the logo at the bottom of it.
Well, here's the thing about music. You want to buy music from people that are cool or look cool.
Yeah.
And I think that's the goal.
And you really make look a picture like can idiots. Make that happen.
So you're saying, but here's what's happened. Let's talk about that. Why do we think that people in society who are cool should look aloof or almost angry? Like, if somebody's smiling, you're like, what's wrong with that guy? What's he hiding?
Why is he so
happy? Don't go,
he must be awesome.
What a cool, happy guy. Yeah, if you see somebody that looks angry, you're like, that guy seems pretty cool.
Maybe I could.
That's not cool.
Yeah.
I
do think, Joe.
I think you guys are clearly cool and way cooler than me. Yeah. I'm an old man. But I'm just saying, we did the same thing. John and I were in a band, and we were urged to spike our hair and look angry and look at different directions. That's just what you did.
What band was that, Johnny?
Which iteration?
Come on.
We were called... Scarlet Thread. We were a Christian rock band, and this is back when you could make dozens of dollars in Christian rock, and we did. We paved the way.
We traveled extensively around the state.
We traveled with. There used to be a group called the For Him. They were it was the number four.
Yep.
We opened for when they broke up. It was just a couple of them, so they were called To Him. They were called To Him by then, and just the number two, and I don't know. But we found out there were a lot of other Scarlet Threads.
Really?
And we wanted to change our name, but so we were going to go with Amy Grant, but that was already taken too.
Right.
And so.
Or once For Him broke up, we were going to call ourselves
For the Money. Because a good deal of Christian rock is for the money.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. There was a Scarlet Thread in like Denmark or something.
Yeah.
Sweden.
They were, they were Iceland. No, it was Finland. You're right. It was Finland because they were like, they had fiddles and stuff in their group. They had like a
Finnish fiddles.
Yeah.
They missed a name.
They weren't happy about us either.
No.
Really?
No, they weren't happy.
If they contacted you.
Well, if we could have understood what they were saying.
Yeah, there was a lot of
just like angry shouting. I don't
even know. I want to try a Finnish accent because I think I would just get it.
John,
it would just
sound like in Iceland. How do they talk?
It would just sound like the Swedish chef. Florgan, Florgan. It would just That's the Swedish chef though.
No, John, don't they do this like weird?
They did a suck back when I was in Iceland about almost a month. It's the original language of the Vikings.
Yes.
And it's
they accentuate the end of a sentence with a suck back.
They would say, I'd be with the missionary and he'd be speaking Icelandic and he would say, yow, and he'd suck back at the end.
Yo.
And so I finally, like 3 weeks, I was like, bro,
that's awesome.
Are y'all sucking back on purpose? Like everybody did it.
Like they all had, like, I think it was like it's like, no, we all have the hiccups and we can't.
And he's like, he didn't even realize. I was like, yeah, I guess we do that. And I was like,
that's how they show, is that like an exclamation point?
I don't know. It just happened. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they tied me to a table and put a big...
Really?
They were about to cut off, and then he came to save me.
Ministry's different there.
It's so crazy.
That's interesting.
No, I enjoyed Iceland. It's beautiful. So,
yeah.
We're like 70 minutes in.
Oh, my gosh. Guys, I'm so sorry.
How long do you want this to go?
I'm sorry.
I feel like it's fine to talk about time on the episode.
It is. And I just want to say, if you've listened for all 70 minutes, we appreciate... You're a real trooper out there. We love you. We love you.
Like, why do you not have a job? Like, I don't want to know.
Yeah, you need to really reassess your life goals.
Yeah. Yeah. Find something that makes it where you can't listen to this.
Yeah.
That would be our goal.
Get a job. Let's talk about that. Get a job. No, we're grateful for our millions of listeners and keep listening. It's going to be good. We're going to keep delving in.
Yeah.
And we're going to find the lighter side of you. We're going to go deep. I'm not going to apologize for going deep, John. I won't do it.
Maybe a little bit.
We might absolutely suck, but we're going to keep doing it, probably.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, is that not...
That's what...
It's going to get better, I hope.
We have done in all the other areas of our lives.
You keep going until you realize, like, maybe that wasn't cut out for this.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah. No, it is going to be it's gonna be fun, man. We're going to have fun in the future, and hope that you'll join us, and we'll be giving more information on how to share this with your friends and things like that as we go. But go ahead and subscribe and be a part of... what's happening with Talk About That, and you know, you can email us topics, other things you want us to address as we go, and we'll
send questions. Yeah. We need a Twitter account.
We'll
make a Twitter account, and then you can send questions.
Yeah, and we'll like act like it's a real conversation.
Yeah, or we can make up questions and be like, oh, Johnny,
how do you deal with so much fame?
How are you so handsome? Well, thank you, listener.
What does it feel like to be so intelligent?
At RealPerson106 said.
Well, you guys have a good day out there, and we'll see you next time on Talk About That.
Hi, I'm Zach.
And I'm Randy.
And we're from Salty Saints Podcast. We're a theology and apologetics podcast.
To find out more, subscribe at lifeaudio.com.